How is everybody? Good? Yeah. I'm good too. Sort of a trifecta here today. I started out with a book study with Nundro, then we did Nundro practice, and now I get to talk a little bit. So, I've been talking about the paramitas, which are the virtues that we cultivate if we're bodhisattvas. And we're all, in one way or another, striving to be bodhisattvas, seeking not only our own awakening, but the awakening of all beings. How many have taken the bodhisattva vow, if you don't mind? Okay. And those that haven't, I firmly believe that if you've taken refuge, the next step is to take the bodhisattva vow. And it's not, you know, being a bodhisattva or striving to be a bodhisattva is serious business. It's not, it's really important. It's about assuming the persona of someone striving for awakening. And it's about practicing those virtues that will lead to that. And the paramitas are those virtues that will lead us to awakening. I've so far talked about generosity, which is the first virtue a bodhisattva practices. Then we talked about ethical conduct. That's the second virtue, which is basically different with us than with other religions. We're not commanded to do anything. It's basically based upon a commitment, and our commitment is to our awakening and the awakening of all beings. So it's sort of like that. The practice of the paramitas are different than just practicing virtue, because it's about transcendent virtue. And transcendent doesn't mean otherworldly. What it means is beyond personal ego. I practice without any self-involvement. So today, we're going to talk about forbearance or patience. I love this virtue because I'm so bad at it. No, I'm serious. I'm very bad at it. A couple months ago, I was supposed to give this talk, and I called Lama Kathy and I said, I'm not ready to give this talk because this week I've really been very impatient and not very forbearing. And she let me off the hook, bless her heart. So, being a little bit more conscious, I think in that time that has transpired, I've done a little bit better of a job. So I don't feel quite the hypocrite I might have felt 2 months ago. You know, it's like that. But, you know, it's pride on my part, I guess, too. I should just give that up, But I don't. I'm still working on that. So, forbearance or patience? Call it one or the other. I like forbearance as the word for the paramita. Other people like patience, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But the objective, and here's the deal, the objective of patience or forbearance within the Buddhist framework is a mind that can cope with absolutely anything. Huh? A mind that can cope with absolutely anything. The material that we have to work with is anger, getting upset, jealousy, being downhearted, and discouraged. Those are all the things that we're working with when we're working with being more patient. As I've told you before, all the paramitas, in terms of how they're ordered, they go from the easiest to the hardest, from those easiest to understand to those that are more difficult and more subtle to understand. Patience is sort of right there in the middle. It's sort of hard to understand, and it's sort of hard to do. And the reason it's sort of hard to do is because we have this tendency to become upset, and that may lie dormant for years. This quality of being upset or this anger may be inside of us and it may be dormant for years, sort of like a time bomb and sort of like a bomb in World War II that was, say, buried in London. You might not see it. It may lie hidden. So because of that, it may be difficult to practice this virtue. We could say that the opposite of the anger that we have that's buried in us is the joy and blessing of being able to go anywhere, do anything, encounter anyone, and to remain totally peaceful, happy, and undisturbed. How many would sign up for that? Of course, we'd all sign up for it. But here's the little thing that we put in parentheses. If I could have the pill, if it's something I could get right now, this moment. We all like that, especially if it has an opioid aspect. That seems to be the big deal these days. So the good news is it is possible to go anywhere, be with anybody, and be doing anything and still be at ease. That's possible. That's possible. And I've seen it in people. You've seen it in people. But the difficulty is that we have to work at it. It has to be a practice. It's something we have to work on. They say that the characteristic trigger of anger is to see fault in others, not ourselves. Over there, right? Naropa, one of our leading masters, has said, samsara, that being on this treadmill of birth, death, and so forth, samsara is nothing other than finding fault in others. That's what perpetuates samsara. Isn't that interesting? When we're finding fault and we see anger, we always, who doesn't say it's justifiable? It's a justifiable reaction to wrong. We all say that, right? The usual critique of forbearance or patience is, I'll be made a rug out of. They'll just walk all over me, right? There are reasons why I'm not being patient here. That's justified. And even if I were to do it, it would be wrong because they'll walk all over me. Well, according to the traditional teachings, the bodhisattva, the person seeking awakening for himself and others, this forbearance is not a weakness, it's a strength. It's a strength within us. It's as real as the love we have for one another. It's a presence within us. So let's go first to the idea that it's justified. Our anger is justified. First of all, it's a nonsense term. It makes absolutely no sense from the standpoint of a bodhisattva. Why? Well, the question is, why hurt the mind with anger because of someone else's wrong? Right? I mean, we think, we can understand this right here, sitting quietly. But out there in the, where the rubber meets the road, where it's always justified. But we can quietly understand that there is, it is totally nonsensical to hurt our mind because somebody else does something wrong. It just adds hurt to hurt and wrong to wrong. So I'm going to damage my mind because someone else did something wrong. The other point that we would make here is that not getting upset or angry does not mean not doing anything. about a harm that's being done. It's not a passive allowing wrong to occur. Shanti Deva said, and I think maybe St. Francis, I don't know. I think maybe St. Francis said this too. If something can be changed, change it for the better. If nothing can be done, have the wisdom to accept the situation. The Buddhist response is not inaction, but approaching the situation with it. And here, this is really cool. I love this definition here. It's not inaction, but approaching the situation with enough serenity, wisdom, and compassion to find the best outcome for everybody. That's what we want to do. So I'm going to repeat that. The Buddhist response is not inaction, but approaching the situation with enough serenity, wisdom, and compassion to find the best outcome from everybody. The habit of anger has kept us in samsara, as Naropa says. And that has been from beginningless time. The practice of patience, of forbearance, is a way out of this vicious circle of hurt and reprisal caused by reacting to wrong with anger. My problem, I don't know about your problem, but my problem is the capacity for anger that I carry. That's my problem. I have this anger that I carry. And frankly, I will carry it to my grave and into my next life unless I do something radically about that. The real problem is not out there. The real problem is my own lack of skill to cope with situations in a clear and enlightened manner, and in a way that's good for everybody. That's the problem. That's the problem of my anger. That's the problem that for my lack of patience. So this training in forbearance, this training in patience is all about looking at this tendency to find fault in other people. And that's where we all start. If we're really honest about it, every time that we get irritated, every time we get angry, it's about something other than ourselves. It's about them. But our reaction, our anger is here, not there. So there's where we have to start. So the question is, will I place my attention and effort on this that is in me, or am I going to be obsessed with how wrong the other person is? And by my obsession, am I going to be dragged once again, because this is what obsession does, it happens over and over, into a bottomless pit of anger in a downward spiral? Talk about dystopian. But that's what anger is all about. That's what our impatience is all about. It drags us into this hole of anger. And if we obsess on it, we just keep going deeper and deeper into it. We can do that. Or, and here's the biggie, or we can relax the tension in our minds and in our bodies that the wrong has inspired, and place our attention on freeing ourselves once and for all. You got a choice. If you like going in this downward spiral of anger and resentment and bad feeling and hurt, and we have that narrative, don't we, in our mind, we've got that. And we can play it over and over again and go down deeper and deeper. Or we can focus our intention on freeing ourselves once and for all. And if we work on, train on it, by looking at our teachers, we can see that eventual freedom. And that eventual freedom is from hurting ourselves and other people. When anger and its offshoots, irritation, that's part of anger, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't have to be a big thing. Irritation may be something that has existed in our lives for years. An irritation of sitting next to a co-worker that we find difficult. Or it might be a spouse that we have problems with getting up in the morning and listening to. We may never say anything. A couple of weeks ago, the Secretary of State, and I don't want to get political, it's just interesting. Tillerson, what's his first name? Rex Tillerson. Good cowboy name. Rex Tillerson said, we're not going to practice strategic patience anymore. He said that, didn't he? And that was in regard to North Korea. That's not Buddhist. But you've done it too, and I've done it, strategic patience. It's when our children or somebody that doing something we don't like, we put our hands on our hips and pat our foot and just wait. And that's sort of threatening, isn't it? It sometimes works with our kids. Doesn't it, Marcus? Does that sometimes work? Strategic patience. But that's not Buddhist. That's just, I'm waiting here until you do what I want you to do. And if you don't do it, the implied threat is, well, we'll see. That's not Buddhist patience. Okay, I got off the subject. I'm sorry I got political for just a moment. So let's go back to what I was saying. Anger and all of its offshoots have found a niche in all of us. And we sometimes do lack forbearance. And the teachings say that when we are in this state of, with this anger in us or this irritation, it's like a, quote, festering wound of a poisoned arrow. Get that message? And in that case, when we're always irritated, or we're irritated when we're next to somebody or whatever, there is no joy in that. There is no happiness in that. There's absolutely no peace in that. The other thing is that a person that's always irritated or always angry, and we see them every day, and we might even sometimes be that person, has an angry demeanor. And people don't want to be around us. They don't like being around an irritated, angry person. The other point that we can make here is that an angry or irritated person is transparently open to negative forces. Eric and I were down at Chillicothe prison, and I was giving a talk similar to this to them. And I paused here and I said, does anybody know anybody like that at the prison? And they all raised their hand. They attract negativity. They attract obstacles. They find reasons to be angry. Someone that goes around always irritated easily find someone to be irritated or something to be irritated about. I've told this story before, but a couple of years ago I was, I think I was going to Chicago. I can't remember where I was going. But anyway, I was in an airport, and it was snowing, and the flight got delayed, and, you know, and there's this one fellow. I felt so bad for him. He's pacing back and forth, back and forth. He took it as if somehow this was directly because they wanted to frustrate orchestrate his day. You know, there's like 200 people that were, you know, delayed. But he felt, and so he's on his cell phone calling this person, that person, telling them. Of course, when we're irritated, we want to convince other people there's good reason. So he was spending his time calling his mother, his fiance, the people he's going to see about how horrible this was. And I had the good fortune to sit next to him on the plane. And I had a cold and I coughed. Well, I coughed in his direction, but I did put up my, you know. And he said, "Would you cough in the other direction, please?" So I couldn't even cough, right? So we see these people. So what I'm saying here is true, that people that are negative in terms of their, you know, they carry anger with them or irritation, attract situations. I can assure you, most of the other people, the 200 people that were waiting, you know, just, you know, they took time, you know, they talked to their kids, they went out and got something to eat, you know, they did something to occupy their time other than calling everybody and telling how angry they were. He attracted that because he carries that with him. It was not objectively in the situation itself so much. Sure, we all felt a little frustrated, but not to that degree. So, what is the essential definition of forbearance or patience? It is to be unperturbed by anything. Now, that's a goal. That's what a bodhisattva is striving for. But wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to go through life unperturbed? Don't you want that? Isn't it worth your effort to train yourselves to do that? Is it worth it? And again, I'm not just talking about raw anger. It could be a gnawing frustration of having to put up with somebody, maybe a close loved one, for years and years. It also could be a complicated form of self-hatred that is the opposite of understanding how precious our human lives are, our human potential. The teachings speak mostly about anger, but that's only because that's the most obvious. It's easy to see that. But what we're talking about when we're talking about patience are all those things and anything that disturbs the mind. It's sort of would be a good training for all of us, is to keep account of those things in our lives that irritate us. Just make a list. Hopefully the list is not too long. Usually it's a couple, but it could be a long list. And then map out or gauge over time how less irritated you become. That would be a good practice. Am I getting better or am I getting worse? So the practice of forbearance is about, first of all, recognizing what it is that triggers our upset. And most of the time, it's probably people, right? It's someone else. We have this anger karma with people, and that's probably the most poisonous thing in this world, is our anger karma with other people. And let's look at what those people are all about. We're angry or we're upset because they stand in the way of our accomplishing what we want to do, or they're hindering what we would like to happen for ourselves, our family, our country, our religion. And what is really interesting to note is when we start identifying those people, we can start identifying what really makes us angry. They are excellent mirrors of our own will and desire, and also our anxieties and our fears. We can also, and I do this too, and I'm sure you do too, I get angry at things. The alarm clock that didn't wake me up on time. The weather that kept me from being able to go on a picnic, frustrating what I want. Something stands in the way of my desire or my plans. We can harbor these kinds of feelings for years, and this happens particularly in family situations. And this kind of thing, especially in families, can lead to a self-righteousness. You know, these feuds that go on forever, like the Hatfields and McCoys, they're really wrong. So what we're seeking here is not some sort of patient, self-repressing, putting up with stuff. It's more active. It's more self-liberating, awake and positive. Namely, and this goes back to what I was saying before, namely an intelligent handling of the mind, preventing it from losing itself in anger, and seeking a quiet, intelligent mastery over our habitual tendency to anger, to upset, and downheartedness. That's a very positive thing. There's nothing of, you know, if we're just repressing it, if we're just got our hands on our hips and our toes tapping and repressing it, it's, you know, and they don't do what we're going to want them to do, this strategic patience turns into anger. It always does if they don't do what we want. It's more positive than that. So another way of looking at this is it's about not retaliating. Desiring to do harm in return for harm. Shantideva in 11th century or was it 8th century? I don't know. It doesn't matter too much, does it? 8th century, okay. Good. Yes, 8th century. Shantideva, a saint within the Buddhist tradition, he said, there are many reasons to avoid anger and being patient. And I'm not going to go over them all. You can read them in the Way of the Bodhisattva. I'm going to pick up just a couple. Actually, I'm going to do three. I lose my place, I have to go back. Sometimes I lose the battle with these things. Be patient. He gave some reasons for that. And the first reason he said was, the reason not to get angry is that the other person, the aggressor, has no control. That's the first reason not to get angry. We'll explain this in a minute. The second reason is whatever's happening is due to our own karma. That's really hard to swallow. We'll talk about that in a minute. And the third reason is to consider that there would be no difference in fault. So let's take the first one. The fact that the aggressor has no control. This is sort of pretty easy to understand. Basically, those, and this is a quote from Shantideva, those who do me harm have lost control of themselves through anger. Anger is such that a person loses control, self-control, when something occurs that they don't like. And so Shantideva says, all beings thus under that influence are, by that very fact, not able to control themselves. So how can you blame someone that's not in control? as long as we carry the karma of anger, we will encounter situations of enemies and aggression. We are talking about our own karmic involvement. To consider down-to-earth example, when you look at someone in an argument, it's really one side has all the truth. Yet if you talk to each one of the disputants, they will be very strong in their opinion and very passionate about what they think. But the fact is, neither of them are 100% objective, and frequently, neither one of them are entirely lucid. When we are in a situation where there is mutual anger, most of the all the time, we're colored by our own delusion and illusions. The second thing is to consider the fault as to consider the fault of your own karma. Now that's tough. Chanti Deva says, the harm that I am experiencing now is a hurt arising through something probably quite similar that I did in a previous existence. Therefore, it is not fitting to retaliate against someone else for the mistakes I made. Now that's hard to swallow. Right? That's difficult. And it often makes people really upset. I had a good friend whose child, 4 years old, stepped in front of traffic and was killed. And I remember talking to him, and I didn't bring this argument up, by the way, but he did. He said, you Buddhists believe that my little child did something that resulted in his dying. And it made me pause, and I had to think about that for a bit. We are never, as Buddha is saying, someone deserved that sort of thing. That's not what we're saying. We're not trying to brand a child as guilty or sinful or anything like that. I should give this up. It keeps skipping back to the beginning. Again, patience. Such kind of thinking is confusing what is dharmic. When we say that sort of thing, we're not taking into account the whole question of non-ego, the nature of consciousness, and the karma it carries. Actually, there is no one or two lines that can explain that situation. Karma is much more complicated than that, just like the truth is often more complicated than that. But the bottom line is that we are not in this life the person we were in the past life. We've aged, we've died, we went through the intermediate state of the bardo, we spent 9 months in the womb, we started afresh, we had a new language probably. So we're not the same person we were in the previous life. Yet karma remains. Hello? And that just puts emphasis on what I just said. Karma remains. That's what goes through. We are that ongoing stream of consciousness, whether we like it or not. And we are that karma that is deep within that consciousness, whether we like that or not. And that karma is, and I'm going to use some fancy terms here, the karma is the background genesis of all possible shapes of our lives in the future that they could take. So here's the way I explain it, and it makes sense to me. I smoked for 30 years, and I reformed myself. I quit smoking about 10 years ago. But my lungs carry continually the effects of having done that. I'm a different person. I'm reformed. I'm a good person now. I'm a non-smoker. But I carry this within me. And the doctor told me that my smoking for, 30 years probably caused my heart attack and triple bypass. So, you know, it's like that. That's what karma does. It would be, again, inappropriate to say that child was somehow guilty. And we have to understand how karma works. And I'm not explaining it entirely here, but I'm giving you some idea, some analogy that will help you to understand that. So if we have that sort of understanding, we recognize that it, whatever happens, could not have happened unless I had some particular karma. The Buddha was not killed by Devadatta because he had exhausted his killing karma. And there's an understanding that if we retaliate, we'll just continue this endless circle of karma, particularly with the person we're injuring. There's an understanding that retaliation continues the habit of anger and all those emotions associated with it. Finally, Shantideva had another point, and the point is that to be patient requires us to consider that there is no difference in fault. If I get angry, that is no different than the person who is otherwise angry at me. No difference. No difference in fault. We're both at fault. No one is faultless in a situation of anger. In Buddhist training, we come to a crossroads where we recognize we do have a choice. Maybe when we recognize we have a choice, we don't act on it the first time. We don't act on it the second time, maybe the third, fourth, fifth time. But if we recognize it, that gives us a choice. And with training, if we train our mind, we eventually can make the right choice in terms of patience. And the final thought I want to leave with you is a thought of Asanga's thought. And it says, to be patient requires us to have the notion of wanting to completely embrace all beings to oneself. All beings. And I quote Asanga, and he says, since I have taken the bodhisattva commitment, and some of you have, so listen up if you've taken this commitment. Since I have taken the bodhisattva commitment, I should be working for the welfare of all beings. Bearing this in mind, I should hold every sentient being, every being dear to my heart, with the same love that I have for the closest person in my life. Again, that's an ideal. But wouldn't it be wonderful? Wouldn't it be incredible if we all held each other with the same love we have for our closest? And that's the ideal. We're working towards it. So Asanga says, give rise to forbearance by believing that it is not fitting to retaliate to temporary harms done by someone treasured so dearly. Loving kindness is absolutely necessary foundation for all bodhicitta. That's what we were talking about earlier, Roberta, when we were in Nindropa. It's the foundation. And the joy to which my heart is moved to another gives me a foretaste of the love I aspire for all beings. Worldly love is wonderful. The joy is, I mean, we all know that, right? But bodhicitta is wonderful and transcendently liberating. Worldly love foreshadows bodhicitta. The bodhicitta is, I aspire to awaken for the benefit of all beings. I'm going to end up with a quote from Ken Holmes, which much of this talk is based on some of his talks. And he says, and I quote, "Whereas anger focuses the mind on someone else with thoughts of anger and enmity, bodhicitta turns thoughts away from the outside and throws the mind back on itself, longing to feel love and nothing but love for each and every being. Again and again, the mind asks itself, when will I be free from the danger of anger? When will this mind be nothing but goodness?" Thus we become grateful for adversity, because if we find love in adversity, we can find love any place. That's a pretty cool statement. So if we can find love in adversity, we certainly can find love any place. That's why we practice patience in adversity. We got a few minutes. Anybody have any questions or comments or thoughts or anything that might be on your mind directly or indirectly related to this? Yeah. If you want to go up to the microphone. And I think Ron's going to have a question too. Ron, you want to go? Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. The idea is that we're going to make mistakes on this path, right? Or we're going to fall back on habitual patterns. It's the way it is. But we get better at it, and the less perturbed we become at recognizing we sort of got off the wagon and just get back on and not give all this self-narrative about, oh, I'm such a bad person. The more we can do that, the more progress we can make, actually. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I...
That microphone doesn't seem to be on.
It is on. No, it's not that... It's not very good. One of these days I'll...
So we'll be patient.
It's not my microphone. One of these days I'll get around to buying... I can buy a new one. But anyway... when that guy was talking about his four-year-old daughter.
Yes.
I mean, I wasn't there, but it sounds like he was being self-righteous and
his being sad and angry.
Yeah, the anger. In the Claude Ancient Thomas book I got, he talks about people who are self-righteous are broadcasting their anger. They feel that everybody else should share their anger,
right,
and their pain,
right,
pain. And that's not really a healthy outlook.
Yeah. Yeah, and
I wouldn't have told the guy you're being self-righteous.
Right.
Woo. I would have just said, hey, it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I will be honest with you, in that particular situation, I was overcome by his grief, and I couldn't say anything. And I just sort of sat there, and I couldn't pretend that I knew the answer. And we later on had a discussion about it. And he was sharing that grief. Yeah. Todd, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to share, in one of the Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche's books, he's talking about patience. And something that was kind of shocking to me, he just said, do you want to be patient? Then let go of your expectations.
Sure.
And so I was like, that can't be right. But the more I think, it seems to be, you know, right in the on the money. So I just wanted to share that, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's one thing I'd say about that is we can have expectations. There's nothing particularly, I mean, to operate in the world, we have expectations of things. But being able to let go of them at moments that are critical is important, and so we have to practice that. Yeah, that's what it's all about, isn't it? I mean, our impatience has to do with someone thwarting our expectations or our desires or what we want. Excellent point, Todd. Thank you. He's debating whether he wants to stand up or not. But he will.
I hope so. I'll be patient. This all gets me to think of this recovery concept of the difference between submission versus detachment. I think that's...
Say that real loud.
Submission versus detachment.
Okay.
Or acceptance, I think. Could be detachment or acceptance. So, you know, submission would be like, you know, I'll sit here and I'll grit my teeth while, you know, circumstances arise that aren't in line with the way I think the world should be versus detachment or acceptance. You know, this is the way it is. And I think I said earlier this morning, how am I going to be at peace with the way things are now versus the way I want them to be?
You know, are you applying that particularly to practice? No, I'm serious.
That's a good question. I think earlier I was, you know, because we were talking about Nundro, and I was saying I was doing like angry, resentful Nundro, like angry, resentful prostrations, yeah. Like, damn it, I have to do this. I'm gonna, But
we sometimes think that diligence has to do with just mustering enough willpower to get through something, which is not diligence. It's just
right, which is a good point, considering that's my refuge name, is diligence. Something like that, Dorje, anyway. I think originally I was, definitely. I was definitely submission, but I think that's changed. It's shifted.
Yeah. So, in terms of practice, I think I understand... You know, in terms of worldly things, that's one thing. But in terms of practice, I really understand what you say when you say, I should be someplace else. I should be further along.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only telling you what I've investigated within myself when that occurs. And when I've investigated that within myself, it is arrogance.
Sure,
I think
no.
I should be more than I am, but I'm Well, why should I think that? Karma got me to this place. It is what I've done up to this point that I'm here. So it would be arrogant or thinking supernaturally to think I should be up there. I'm here. But the beauty of knowing that I'm right here is now from here I can move.
Right.
From where I thought I should be, I can never move because I'm not there. Does that make sense? Am I just talking? So I have frequently been in a state of arrogance.
Well, let me...
I think I should be... I am better than this. No, I'm not. And it's okay.
Let me investigate that word, arrogance. Is it arrogance or is it just a miscalculation of your, of where you are?
It is arrogance.
Okay. Well, but you could be arrogant and you could also just, right? I mean, those could be two different things, right?
Right. That's one thing, but to think I should be something okay. better is arrogant.
Okay.
All right. Did I win that argument? He likes to argue.
I'm being considerate of everyone else in the room, and I'm having patience. Anyway, thanks.
Thank you. You bring up some good points.
You touched on this briefly, but I think, when you notice that you're angry, frustrated, especially towards other people, a lot of the times it's because you see things in them that you're angry, frustrated about yourself.
Sure.
And I know for me that's been a big thing recently where I see things in other people that I'm doing and I want to fix them.
Sure.
But, I approach it in the wrong way and then I become angry and frustrated.
Right.
So it's a matter of, just letting go.
Yeah. And it doesn't, we can't fix other people, As Mr. Spice, I can't vote for you. He said, we can't vote for people. Well, I can't make you be what you're not. That's really true. And we are often seeing in others what's really within ourselves. But the idea of patience is not that we don't try to help another person who we see in difficulty. It means not using anger as a tool. It means trying to work from a place of complete ease where I give what I can and recognize my own limitations. If we all were perfectly enlightened bodhisattvas, the help that I would give to another person would be perfect. It would help them, and they would grow and be enlightened. We are not, so many times our advice, our help, is not going to be all that we would want it to be. So we have to be patient with that also, and not expect us to be able to give perfect bodhisattva advice to other people. Best advice is the advice we give to ourselves. I need to practice more. I need to work on it. Anybody else have any questions or comments or thoughts? If not, I'd like us to do something that Mindra Rinpoche tells us to do. It's in the North American Moonlam. You're all getting all set to be meditating, right? Relax. And that's exactly what I want you to do. I want you for the next few moments just to relax. If you want to get into a meditation posture, that's fine. But relax your mind and body and get into any kind of position physically that will help you be relaxed. And notice your mind and relax it. Really relax. And when you notice you're not relaxing, return to relaxation. And then finally, the third point is observe. Observe the mind and the body relaxing. So my wish is that we all experience a blessing of being able to go anywhere, do anything, encounter anyone, and to remain totally peaceful, happy, and undisturbed. Thank you all.